Welcome back, my friends, to the Mail Right Real Estate Agent Podcast Show. And this is episode 89. You know, I want to remind you our show benefits from your subscriptions and your feedback. So you can do both on iTunes or wherever you download your podcast. Both subscribing and commenting help us with our show's credibility and visibility, and it helps us book higher caliber guests like the one we have today. So please, after the show, take 30 seconds to subscribe and maybe another 60 seconds to leave us your comments, feedback, pros and cons. We love to hear it all. So I have been like a kid at Christmas time waiting to open his presents ever since we booked this guest. We have Mr. Dermot Buffini, the CEO of Buffini & Company, the largest real estate business coaching company in the world. And before I ask Dermot to introduce himself and we dive into the questions, I want to turn things over to my co-host, Jonathan Denwood, so he can tell us about our amazing sponsor.
Oh, thanks, Thomas. And our sponsor is the Real Estate Marketing University. They're into training. They will show you how to triple or even four times your income and want to find out effective ways to attract customers and increase sales. They are into all forms of modern marketing, from social media to Facebook, paid advertisement, and they're basically a training company. They should give you the skills and then you can utilize those to build your business. So if that sounds interesting, go to realestatemarketinguniversity.com. And back to you, Thomas.
Thanks, Jonathan. Well, Dermot, top of the morning to you.
And the rest of the day to you. How are you?
Wonderful. Thank you for being here, my friend.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Dermot, before we get into the questions, will you share a little bit about yourself and who it is you are and what you do?
Sure. Well, I'm born and raised in Ireland. I know the Dermot part reflects that. The Buffini part might be a bit more confusing. somewhere along the line, the Italians infiltrated Dublin, had a pint of Guinness and decided to stay. I'm one of six kids. Grew up in pretty modest beginnings. Our father was a hard-working house painter, had his own business. We kind of all grew up in the business, learned to work with our dad, and learned the principles of how he ran his business. And as I said, we all grew up in Dublin. Then one by one, one of the brothers got an idea to go to America, and I think that idea was good for enough for the rest of us. So we said, I'll go too. So one by one, we came over to the States. A lot of twists and turns along the way for my brothers who preceded me. Same entrepreneurial spirit, did various things where they did various businesses and ended up, my brother ended up in the real estate business. While he was doing that, I was kind of making my way through high school. And then I was, at the time, I wanted to be a professional soccer player, believe it or not. Broke a disc in my back when I was 15. So that was kind of the end of it. Yeah. Did get some trials in England, not for anywhere as extravagant as Chelsea, unfortunately, Jonathan. But Leicester and Millwall did knock on my door. I'm not sure if Millwall counts as a trial, but I almost went. But anyway, I really kind of, the thought of not playing professional soccer or playing at a high level was kind of like, maybe I need to find something else to do. And actually, I was offered a soccer scholarship. First one I was offered to was to Abilene Christian in Texas, and just goes to show there was no Google there at that time, because I wouldn't have gone to Abilene Christian, and if they'd have Googled me, they wouldn't have invited me to Abilene. I got offered a couple. I didn't end up going there. Got another soccer scholarships offers. One of them was here in San Diego where my brothers were, and the guy said to me, he said, look, I won't have a scholarship for about a year. Why don't you go and do two things? One, why don't you go and earn some money, so when you get here, you'll have a few dollars. And the second thing is, you need to put on a bit of weight. You're a little light. And nobody's ever told me that since, so I must have I've nailed that one.
Yeah, you and me both.
But I basically, when I went to work, I ended up working in a place in Grafton Street. But actually, this is my office wall, which, believe it or not, is the street that I started my sales career in. Oh. And I started selling men's shoes and women's shoes. And I didn't get paid a lot, but I figured out I really love I love selling and I love serving. And I did that for a number of years, and I did it. I ended up not taking, even pursuing the soccer scholarship, because I started loving the sales area and I was kind of done with soccer, and I still played you know, amateur and stuff like that. But it was sales that caught my fancy. And then I went from there to the life insurance business, went to the financial services, they told me. I did a great interview in a beautiful building in downtown Dublin, only to realize what it really was selling insurance door to door, which, you know, it seemed like a good idea at the time. But I learned the hustle side of sales there, you know, knocking on doors, collecting the premiums, trying to sell a bit of insurance. Did that for a couple of years. Did okay. Didn't really like it. But I certainly learned the hustle side of sales.
Sure.
And then I ended up getting into the transportation business, and which was the logistics, moving stuff from one side of the planet to the other via road, via air, sea. And that kind of taught me the logistical side of the operational side of business. And then I ended up moving, starting my own company, moved to London, started a company there with a couple of partners. My brother then at this stage had gone out of the real estate business, and he'd started coaching and training people in a system that he built, which a lot of it was the principles and values we learned from our father in working by referral, taking care of people, doing such a good, great job for them that they'd want to refer their friends and family members to you. And he did great in real estate. Then he started teaching people. You've been to the seminars. And then the coaching company started because people needed help with the implementation of the ideas, not just the, you know, the idea and being fired up at the seminar. And so we had these two worlds going on at the same time, where my business was growing in London. He was doing this thing over in the States. I didn't really understand it. I actually didn't even really trust it, to be honest with you. I thought it was a bit like, oh, it's the Americans going to a rah-rah session. They're going to walk on holes. They're going to do whatever, shave their heads, run out the door. Everything's going to be okay. I didn't really subscribe to that. So I came to a seminar in 1997 in Seattle. There's about 400 people there. I don't know if you've ever thought about going to a seminar, if you have siblings, if you'd ever even think about doing that. I know most people would think that's kind of a strange thing to do. But I went to hear him speak, and I went, wow, he's got a real gift, and he loves what he does, and he's excellent at it. And then I was like, wow, this is, you know, you see someone in a different light, and I was like, this is exciting. And I also thought everything that he was sharing, all the principles from his own business, what he was teaching these business owners, is exactly what I needed in my business. And I knew those things, but I wasn't actually highly organized. I wasn't a systematic, because I, like most people in business, you're entrepreneurial, you learn as you're going.
Right.
And then I went around the room, and I kind of did my, put my investigative hat on, and I asked people questions. I said, okay, Jonathan, why are you here? Well, I came, and this happened, and that, and I needed this, and this has changed my life, and this has changed my business. And then I was like, okay, and I went to the next person, and sure enough, that was the common theme. This has changed my business. This has changed my life. And then they said, your brother has changed my life.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, that's amazing. I said, you know, he couldn't even change his socks 6 years ago. Here he is changing lives. So I ended up going back to the States, or going back to England to run my business. And then eventually I was like, nah, I think if I'm going to go to the States, and Brian had said, come on over. I said, if I'm going to do it, I got to do it now before, you know, I get married and settle down. And
yep.
I came for 3 months, And it was San Diego in January, and 68 degrees, and I was on the golf course, and I went, you know, I could do another 3 months of this.
Yeah.
So that's kind of, and kind of all my experience and everything I'd done from serving people in the sales industry, which in the retail side of things, to the hustle side of sales, to the transportation logistical piece, really kind of prepared me unknowingly to be part of a Bafinian company. But obviously, when I got here, I kind of started at the lowest rung. Whatever the lowest rung of the ladder was, I started two below that. I say it was some sort of like brotherly process. Yeah. But that's a bit of my background. And so I've been here 17 years, and I've kind of done everything here and been part of this journey, and it's been amazing. So,
all right, and we're going to pick up there in a minute. Before we dive into the next question, I want to let Jonathan introduce himself real quick. And Jonathan, go ahead and tell folks who you are, what you do, and how to reach you.
Oh, hi there, folks. I'm the founder of MailRight, which is a software platform that helps you keep in front of your biggest referral resource, the people in the community that know you and love you, or should I say respect you, maybe. So if that sounds interesting, just go to mail-write.com and learn some more and contact us.
All right. And I'm Thomas J. Nelson. I'm a residential realtor here in San Diego, California, where I'm never too busy for your referrals. And you can find me on my website at thomasjnelsonrealtor.com or on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter. All right, let's get back to Dermot. Now, Dermot, you left off right where I want to pick up with my first question, because Brian Buffini, of course, in the real estate world especially, is a bit of a celebrity. He's well-known. His coaching company is well-known. Mm-hmm. And you're his brother. So obviously you got the job as CEO because you're his brother.
That's right. Well, two reasons. That's one, and nowhere I can get a job anywhere else.
But it isn't quite that simple, is it? Because you started somewhere other than at CEO, didn't you?
Yeah. Well, you know, at the end of the day, at Buffini & Company, it doesn't matter what your last name is, you know, or who you are, who referred you. You know, we had a saying in our family growing up, which was, you have to earn your stripes.
Ah.
And at the end of the day, if you can't do the job that we give you, and if you can't do a great job, if you can't do more with it, then you shouldn't move to the next thing. You know, it's being faithful with the little to be given much. And so I started at the lowest rung of the ladder. To be honest with you, it was a bit of an ego blow because I had run my own company. Mm-hmm. I had clients like Frontline, which is a BBC company. I had other major companies that I was working with. I thought it was like, hey, I'm kind of, he's lucky. It's his lucky day, you know. The company's about to get classy. And Brian was like, hey, listen, look, we can use you, but I think you need to, just kind of learn what the business that you're coming into. So it was really park my own ego, park my pride, park my experience, and just come here and say, okay, I'm going to do whatever I'm asked to do, I'm going to do it as well as I can. And that started, funny enough, with me calling Vietnamese realtors in Pasadena.
Yeah.
To invite them to a half-day event. And it was great, other than the fact that they didn't understand what I was saying, and I didn't understand what they were saying. But other than the language barrier, we got on great. But anyway, I started wherever I could. I was very thankful. I was very appreciative of the role. Ultimately, I didn't want to let my brother down.
Right.
He had given me an opportunity to be involved with his company, and ultimately, I wanted to do a great job for him. And so, and it was challenging in many, many ways because, I wasn't from here. I had to learn a little bit of the culture. I had to learn the business. I didn't like, picking up the phone and calling realtors and inviting them to a half-day seminar, but I did it.
Yeah.
And so I did that, and then I did as well as I could, did all right at it, and I got the next opportunity and the next opportunity and the next opportunity. And, I was fortunate enough as well. I've served under four CEOs here at Buffini & Company.
Mm-hmm.
And I learned from every one of them. But I think what helped me was, A, learning this business from the grassroots up.
Right.
And I think what was funny was, as I learned this business from the grassroots up, all of the experience I had from my past, it was kind of it was good timing for me, and it was good timing for the company, because as we grew, I was able to apply that knowledge that I had from the outside,
right,
but also apply it knowing what sort of company we were, who our customer was, and what the mission of the company was. So, yeah, I've been here 17 years, and I would say there's not, every day there's something new, and every day there's something to learn. And quite honestly, I share my story. Every group of people who we hire, every month we have a new group starting with us. Probably 10 people a month we're hiring.
Oh, wow.
And I'll go in and I share my story. And the reason I share my story is because it's like, look, don't tell us what you can do. Show us what you can do with what we've given you.
Right.
And my story is part of that. And they realize, hey, you know what? I didn't come in here planning to be CEO of a Buffini company. In fact, I came here just going, Brian's like, hey, be here as long as you want to be here. And I wasn't sure where it would end up. It's just, that's the way it's worked out. That's the way the big man upstairs has aligned it. So, but I've learned a ton, and it's been awesome. And now I'm very fortunate to get to do what I do every day.
So I picked up a nugget already, because what I heard you say is you set your ego and your pride aside, and you were just willing to accept what the journey was going to be at that time, not when truly where you were going to end up in it. And I think that's a great lesson for realtors who are new in the business or maybe changing locations and having to start over again. So some good nuggets in there.
Yeah.
I want to ask you a kind of a two-part question. What do you see as your number one responsibility as a CEO? And what do you see for realtors as their number one responsibility as CEO?
Yeah, I think it's a great question. I think I would say, there's probably a principle or maybe say one word that embodies a lot. Okay. So I'd say for me, the number one thing is clarity.
Mm.
What business are you in?
I'm in the real estate business.
Right. Who do you serve? You know?
Right.
You know, what do I bring to the table? What are our gifts, our talents, our attributes? What are our goals? Are we on track for them?
Mm.
You can't lead people if you don't know where you're going.
Right.
By the way, the compression of the day, you know, we're all working, you know, I don't know what, you know, I did okay this morning. I got here without any major incidents before 8 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
There's over 200 people working here. And I tell our leadership team all the time, something's happened. There's people who've come in, and by the time you say, how are you doing? Good morning. How are you? You know, they've already had a rough morning. They've had a fight with their spouse. The kids have thrown up on the floor. The kids haven't got into the car when they need to get into the car. Somebody cut you off on traffic. Somebody gave you a Starbucks. It wasn't warm enough. You know, you flipped out before you get here.
Right.
And that's before you get to your customers.
Yes.
I'd say what I spend most of my time now is coaching others. And as we're getting, you know, again, stop me if I get on a rant here, but ultimately, I think when you put tactics and strategy at the same table, tactics are too strong for a strategy.
Hmm.
There's too many of them. There's too many things happening in your day. There's too many fires burning. You've got to separate them. You've got to allow strategy be in a place where it can dream, it can think, it can look ahead. And you protect the strategy and you manage the tactics towards the strategy. So that's where clarity is so important. If you don't know where you're trying to go, if you don't know what your customer is, if you don't know what you're in the business to do, if you don't have clarity on the customers you're trying to serve, and the customers that are not for you,
So
you'll end up a hot mess because you'll be trying to please everybody.
Right.
So I would say the number one thing for me is clarity. Where are we going? Who's our customer? What do we do? What's people's jobs? What's the expectations? And that allows you to remove yourself from the day-to-day, take a big, deep breath, and go, hey, we're still going north. And that's where we want to go. Now, we might not be going straight up I-5 north. We might have had to do a few detours. Right. We may have got off on the wrong exit. And we might have gone 5 south for a little bit. But, you know, we can get off the next exit because we're trying to go 5 north. So I'd say that is the number one thing is for me, making sure I'm clear. And then making sure they're clear. And then you have to relentlessly communicate the clarity of what it is you're trying to achieve for your customer, for your company, and for the people in the company.
Mm. Oh, that was a great definition. So, and just a side question on that. When you talk about protecting your strategy, what do you do to protect your strategy?
Well, I think, first of all, you've got to look at it regularly.
Yeah.
Secondarily is you've got to be willing to adjust it.
Mm.
If you're so dogmatic that your strategy is the right one, you're pretty much, you cut people out of the conversation.
Right.
You know, you can say to someone, this is the greatest pen of all time, and they're going to sell everywhere in the world.
Right.
And you got to be a complete moron if you don't agree with me. But anyway, Thomas, what do you think? Jonathan, what do you think?
Yeah.
Well, you know, we're okay.
Doesn't leave much room, does it?
I guess you're pretty convinced, and I kind of can't. You know, I think as well, you've got to get outside of yourself. I spend a lot of time talking to people who are not in the real estate industry.
Hmm.
Hey, what do you think? Here's what we do. Here's what we're trying to do. What would you do if you were me? And I provide that for a lot of other companies and a lot of other people.
Right.
Sometimes they pay me for it. Sometimes they don't. Either way, I do it.
Right.
Because in talking to other people about their strategy, you get to develop your own. And I think this is where the tactics are important, because that's feedback.
Right.
This is what you're trying to do. This is how you're going to try and do it. That didn't work. Okay, great. Let's. Either, and sometimes people want to quit on it altogether. You're like, no, let's do it for 3 or 4 more times. We'll make incremental improvements around that tactic, and then we'll decide not to do anything with it.
Right.
So, you know, it's kind of feedback. I wouldn't have them always at the same table, the tactics and the strategy. You got to separate them. But if strategy goes off, it becomes aloof from the company, it becomes aloof from the customer, and it can end up being arrogant, prideful, dogmatic. It's got to look back and see what is and adjust the strategy between that. So I think you've got to consistently be thinking about it. And then also I'd say one of the things that Brian and I will do a lot is, and this will be predominantly my question, an idea comes up and I'll say, that's great and we can do that. But a couple of questions. What does that do for our customer? What does that do for our company? And what does that do to the people working inside the company? And the last thing is, does that help us in 3, 6, 9, 12 months? Is it in the direction we want to go, or is it a distraction that feels good, that somebody's doing in the marketplace, that somebody has an idea, or a trend that's popped up, or is it something that we're going to be able to commit to strategically in a way that is that's meaningful? So,
yeah, that's good. That's great advice. I think we jump in too quick sometimes. We don't spend enough time on the strategy, reviewing it, and like you just said, are we going in the right direction? Great
advice. The last thing is, I'd say, it doesn't have to be sophisticated.
Okay, that's a good point.
If people say, well, what's your 5-year game plan? To be alive, for my kids to be like me. At the end of the day, it has to be flexible. A strategy can be for 12 weeks. A strategy can be for a month. It can be, I would say it's constantly, I think people can make too much of strategy either.
Right.
It's an idea of where I want to go. And sometimes when you get there, you might have to pivot and go somewhere else.
Right. Well, let me ask you this then, because you're kind of touching on my next question. There are success principles, and there are success principles that you know to be true. Yet you see realtors constantly struggling with these or limping along resisting them. But if they were to just surrender to them, they'd realize more success than they've ever had before. Can you point out some of those principles that you see people struggling with, that if they just took it on, yeah, it would change things for them?
Yeah, I think paying attention maybe put it a different way. In today's world, you can hear about disruptors.
Yes.
Okay. People will say, I've had people come up to me and say, I'm like, what do you do? I'm a disruptor. I'm like, well, God bless. I hope there's a good thing for that. And I hope that, passes in a while. It sounds painful.
Right.
I would say, the biggest disruptor in the real estate industry and the real estate brokerage world is today what it's always been, which is realtors and real estate brokers. I am my own biggest disruptor, left to my own device.
Yes.
Okay. Nobody can disrupt me more than me. you couldn't even try to.
Yeah.
So I think this is where I think people have a mindset, and I think America's difficult in this regard, is that there's this perception of somebody else is winning and I'm not. And I think that
Looking at the Joneses.
Yeah, and the shiny object syndrome. We call it squirrel. Like squirrel, face that. And so I think number one is, at the end of the day, most people, the real estate industry is a great business. And a lot of people don't treat it with the reverence it needs to be treated with. Like, this is a great opportunity. Is it hard? Yes, you're on your own. Is it difficult? Yes, it is. People, you're working with people. They're not easy. Things don't go your way. But I think people being committed and being all in, and not being short-term thinkers, and having a plan for I'm gonna persist with this. I'm gonna work hard. I'm gonna learn what I can about it. I'm gonna focus on improvement. I think there's a great expression. I use it here. I say we're either winning or we're learning. You're either winning or you're learning.
Right.
And so I think that's it. I think all of us. And it doesn't matter whether it's real estate or any other business people I meet with, they either get discouraged or they get motivated by something else, and they haven't truly paid the price in the business that they have to finish it out. And here's the thing, give it your all. And if it fails, fantastic. Scratch it off the list and move on to something else. Yesterday on the podcast I'm doing, I had one of the founders of Instagram on. He's a friend of mine.
Yeah.
And he's 31 years of age. And he's been retired for 2 years.
Wow.
He got thrown out of high school for hacking into the school system. He had some talent. It was misdirected.
Yeah.
But he just figured out he had to work. And his goal was, hey, I want to retire. So we were talking about the Instagram story and this, that, and the other. And he brought up one of his own pet peeves. He's 31 years of age. But I'm telling you, a lot of wisdom, a lot of principles in his thinking. And I said to him, he said his biggest pet peeve is somebody saying, you know what? I wish I, if only I had had that idea.
Mm-hmm.
If I had had that opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
And people wishing for someone else's opportunity or somebody else's idea. And he goes, why not give it your all for the idea that you have?
Right.
And be sold out for what you're doing. So I think that's it. I think there's a lot of distraction. I think people are being marketed to. I think it's like, hey, you need this, you need this, you need the phone, you need, and if you just had this and you have this, you know what? If you have the heart to serve someone and do a great job for them and go the distance and earn your fees and give them, if they pay you a dollar, I'm going to give you $2 worth of value. I think that a lot of people would do a lot better. And I think the last piece is just they get some help. They get some outside perspective.
Yep.
And I don't know about you, but you know, I've met a lot of very interesting people. And from billionaires to evangelists to, you know, my friend from Instagram. And I've learned that there's two things I've learned in, about myself, and whether my brother or anybody else or people who've done well in life is, number one is that there's nobody on the planet who doesn't need some encouragement.
Hmm.
And number two is there's nobody I've ever met who has their crap together. And if they tell you they have, walk across the other side of the street and say, best of luck.
Yeah. So. Well, I think too, social media contributes to that in the sense that we're always looking at people's highlight reels on social media. They're never posting the bad stuff going on in their life. They're only posting the good stuff. So you start looking at your own life going, well, I'm not traveling there. I didn't buy a new car. You know, my kid didn't get a scholarship. You know?
Yeah.
But, well, you know, you bring up something too that you're kind of setting up my next questions beautifully here, Dermot. So thank you.
That's what I do. I'm a setup guy.
I want to talk about setbacks. You know, and maybe you think about a setback that you overcome, something big in your life or in your business, something that you had to stay motivated through and overcome it. And what was it that you drew on to not stop, to not quit, to see the journey through?
Well, I can tell you, I think, so it's going to be I have to hang in here with me with this. My propensity is no quit.
Hmm.
I think growing up in Ireland where, you know, we had famines, didn't have a lot. You know, Jonathan, you could probably relate to this. You weren't supposed to complain. You were supposed to be happy with your lot. You put your old troubles in your old kit bag and march on. So I think my natural design is a couple of things. One is, okay, tomorrow, it's going to happen tomorrow. It's going to happen next week. It's going to happen. And so I think that's my natural propensity. And I think there's an element of, one, denial in that, a little delusion, which I think helps.
Right.
Okay. What I have learned to do is, like, for example, when I wasn't going to be a professional soccer player, when I broke a disc in my back, I grieved it for about 12 minutes.
Mm.
That's not healthy.
So you felt you should have grieved it longer?
I've learned that when you have setbacks, just take your time with them. It's rich soil. I would recommend having a pen and paper next to you, a journal. What's going on? What's happened? How do I feel? What did I want? How do I feel about it? And I don't want to turn, I'm not Oprah, but I can tell you that that's a much healthier way of dealing with setbacks because it's a great opportunity to learn about yourself. And you have a journal, go, I've been through this before. How did it feel? What did I do? Who did I talk to? What did I worry about? What actually took place? Mm. And so what I've learned to do is, and I've really worked hard on this, is, you know, failure. Dealing with failure. Somebody asked me, it's like, I played on a soccer team that was very dominant. And somebody said to me, well, how did you deal with failure? And I said, well, if we had a bad game, we just took it out on the next team.
Yeah.
And we didn't have it. But it's not if you're going to have a setback. It's not if.
Right.
It's not if something bad's going to happen in your life. It's not if the conversation's not going to go right or the client's not happy. It's when. And so I think for me, I've had to, my natural bent is, all right, come on, let's just keep going. The problem is, especially when you lead others, they don't feel the same way. And so if you're not connected to them in, hey, this hurt, that's not nice, I don't like that either, let's just acknowledge it. What did we learn from this? What could we do better from this? Or celebrate it and go, Thank God, that's not what we're supposed to be doing. That's not what we're, we tried it. It didn't work. Move on. Let's get back to what we do. So I think that's something that I've learned. And I think that's a healthier balance than just being like, putting it behind you, ignoring it, pretend like it never happened. And just, I'm going to overpower the next thing. I don't think you get it out of your system or you don't learn anything until you actually reflect on, hey, what's taking place and what did I learn? And the last thing is, if it's a setback that is consistently happening, well, then what's my part? I'm the common denominator in this.
Right.
And so how do I do that differently? So I guess that's just part of being a student of the game.
Mm. Such good advice. I mean, that's talking about taking out the head trash.
Yeah. And to be honest with you, that's as much of the game as possible. I mean, this is the most powerful muscle in the world, and it can control your world. And if you're feeding the garbage, if you're not exercising, if you're not working it, if you have an overinflated opinion of yourself, that'll help you. If you have an underinflated opinion of yourself,
right,
that's not based in truth or grace or, hey, I am winning, then this thing will dictate to you who you are or who you aren't. And that could be as bad in a success, in somebody who's very successful.
Mm.
They're probably not as good as they think they are.
Yep. I'm getting a nod from Jonathan. I know we got to take a sponsor break here. So, Jonathan, I'll turn it over to you for a second.
Oh, thanks, Thomas. I've been enjoying, I've just been listening, absorbing this fascinating interview. But we've got to go for a break, folks, and we'll be back in a minute, and we'll be delving into this interview a bit more. Be back in a minute, folks.
Do you want quality leads from homeowners and buyers right in your own neighborhood? Then you need MailRite. It is a powerful but easy to use online marketing system that uses Facebook to generate real estate leads at a fraction of the cost you'd pay from our competition. We stand behind our work with a no question asked 30-day money back guarantee. So don't delay. Get started today. Go to mail-write.com.
Now coming back. It's been a fascinating interview. Off you go, Thomas.
Okay. Were you going to say something, Dermot?
Oh, go ahead, carry on.
Okay. So, you brought up the podcast, and I want to congratulate you on Takeover Tuesdays. That's a fun segment that you've added to Brian's podcast, and you're interviewing some heavy hitters.
Yeah. It's fun. Yeah.
So, and in that podcast, you talk about how success leaves clues. And so what I've always been curious about is, up to this point in your life, what has success taught you?
Hmm. Well, you know, I it's funny because I don't think of myself as successful.
Oh.
Yeah, I don't think from that standpoint. I don't.
Wow.
I can tell you this. I don't dwell on the failures. And that's part of the challenge. I'm trying to not overdwell on them either.
Right.
But I don't dwell on success either. I think either can be an imposter.
Mm.
And so, but I am learning as well, though, as an organization. I mean, we've got a team here. We're fired up. They're excited. They're killing their goals. We've just surpassed our year-end goal at the end of February.
Wow. Congratulations.
Yeah. Now, unfortunately, the sad thing is Brian and I, we do not have it in our DNA to celebrate. And it doesn't mean that we're ungrateful. We're great. I mean, we're good with our folks. We have a lot of fun. We're just, let's get after the next thing.
Right.
But I literally have people around me. I'm like, hey, please, this is a weakness that I don't celebrate the success. We don't draw a finish line. We don't cut the cake. We don't say, hey, well done, well done, well done. And review how far we've come, how we've accomplished.
Demon, that's so American, though, isn't it?
That's a good point. You know, this is kind of great, right? We've got an Irishman, an Englishman, and a Scotsman?
And me? Now, I'm actually half Irish, half Italian.
So there you go. Oh, my gosh, you got the same disease as I have.
I do.
But I think what Dave Liniger said it, and I think he's true. Dave Liniger is the CEO and founder of Remax. You know, I think success is a lot harder than survival.
Mm.
Because I think a lot of things can change. And if you're not careful, you can believe your own hype.
Yep.
You know, my kids have a different opportunity than what I had growing up.
Right.
But you know what? They're gonna learn the price of the dollar, and they're gonna earn the sweat of hard work.
Mm.
So I think you have to be careful in not acknowledging it, you know. But I think as well, you've got to be careful just to kind of go, at the end of the day, what is success? And I think it's about achieving your potential and helping others achieve their potential and helping your clients achieve their goals. And then, but I think it's different for everybody. You know, we have somebody in our coaching program who made $70,000 last year because they were a stay-at-home mom and they wanted to earn some money and they wanted us to keep their hat in the ring. And, you know, we had somebody last year make $6 million. Well, who's more successful?
Right. It comes down to
the... I can't tell you. Right. It might be that the lady who made 70 grand and stayed home with her was far more successful. So I think you've got to define it for yourself. And then I think you got to be careful with it too. I think if you define your success based on someone else's, you're going to find when you reach there, it's probably wasn't all that cranked up to be.
I'd like to ask them a question. One of our goals of this podcast, as me and Thomas agreed, was to try and provide education guests that would help agents that are entering the industry to reduce the dreadful failure rate of 80 to 90% in the industry. Right. Have you got any kind of, based on your extensive experience, any kind of insights or tips to a new agent, maybe in the first 6 to 12 months, about the things in general they should be looking at not to become one of the 90% that drop out the industry?
I mean, that's a great question. You know, we did a study recently where somebody who was with us 1 year, they'd never been in real estate before, but they had 1 year of experience, and we coached them, had the same income level of a 16-year veteran. It's like anything. You come into something and your enthusiasm level is high.
Yep.
The first thing we have, I love new agents because they're like, what should I do?
Yeah.
And I think that number one is it's simpler than they think it is.
Yeah.
Number two is it's harder than they think it is. the third thing is it's be very careful about who, you know, they follow.
Right.
I would recommend somebody, you know, we're not for everybody. Maybe someone else's system suits them. But I'd say find a system that aligns with your values and say, no, this is how I want to do things. Mm. You know, there's people we deal with people who they like people and they want to serve people. Other people, they just want to hammer the phones and they want to do things. There's nothing wrong with that, but they should be who they are. But I think you got to pick a direction, and I think ultimately is keep it simple. Start with who you know, who knows you, what relationships you have. Go see them. Take that enthusiasm with them. Don't pretend like they know everything.
Yeah.
Because that just comes off. I'm new. You know.
Yeah.
If they come, you know, get aligned with a good brokerage. Find somebody who you respect how they do business. Take them to lunch. Ask them questions. See if they'll mentor you. Mm. Communicate your enthusiasm through, hey, I'm here. By the way, Jonathan, I don't have a lot of clients right now, so you get my full attention.
Yeah.
The other side of it is, Jonathan, that I am 4 seconds away. I am 20 minutes away from finding out any question you have regarding real estate. I've surrounded myself with great people, knowledgeable people. And if I don't know something, I'm going to tell you that. And if I do know something, I'm going to tell you that. And I'll get back to you what I don't know. But what you can depend on me for is blank, blank, blank. And so I think that's it. Number two is, you know, in Ireland, you know, there's an expression that says every penny's a prisoner.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of folks get into the business and sometimes they're putting it on a credit card.
Yeah.
And their time is running out and they're putting things on bill. They're putting it on expenses. I think it doesn't have to cost you a lot of money either. And I think that, I think that's it. And I think people do well. I don't think as many people get into the industry as they do to fail. Nobody got their real estate license and said, yep, I'm going to be out of here in 90 days. I think, it's knowing what step one is, step two is, step three is. Again, the plug us, but you know, we have built training programs to do this very thing. You know, which is what you're going to do for the first 12 weeks of your business. And it's crucial because you're bringing up a big point because, you know, we brought out a program called 100 Days to Greatness. And it soon got, and it trained 70,000 realtors, and that gave birth to another program called Peak Producers, which teaches people how to run their business like a business. How can I be the CEO and the COO and the CFO of my business? And most people get into the business don't thinking, they think they're a salesperson. They don't realize I have my own business now.
Right.
So what do I do? The first 100 days of, right now we've got a presidency and we're into 67 days, but I don't think anybody's paying attention to it. But it's the first 100 days. It's traditionally where the president gets the opportunity to set up his administration, to get his feet under the desk. And there's usually a bit of a honeymoon period.
Right.
And they show that in history, whether it's through a war or like in George Bush's example, for instance, he had like, I think he was in it 48 days before September 11th happened or something like that. Maybe it wasn't September 11th, but something happened which threw him off track. But the first 100 days is critical for that president getting set up. The first 100 days of a baby being, you know, who's conceived and forming in the womb is critical for the formation of all the vital organs and the sex and the health of that child. You know, the first 100 days of a college graduate, you know, or a college student, whatever their GPA is after the first 100 days, it's pretty sure that's what they're going to graduate with. Statistics support that. That's pretty much what you're going to have when you leave college. So the same way is, and it's a great question, because more people get into it thinking they have more time that they have, they don't know what to do, and I would say anybody getting in, they have to set up like 100 days, I got a plan for 100 days, and the clock is ticking, and everything I do today is going to show up 3 months from now, and that's the game that people come into the business don't know. They're used to getting a paycheck every 2 weeks, and now they realize, what I do today, the seeds I plant today, I might not harvest them for 90 days, and that's a different mindset. And I think that ultimately, I think the industry could probably do a better job on that of preparing people, not getting them in and saying, best of luck.
Right.
And I'm going to recruit the next person, but saying, hey, well, let's get you on a pattern, on a plan to help you succeed. And I think that's, I'll be honest with you, I think that's something that is just a bare, should be a minimum requirement for the industry.
100% agree with you. I've often said, why don't they teach the basic business skills before they cut them loose on the market? But that's for another podcast.
Yeah.
You'll get me on my soapbox. I know we're getting short on time, and I know there might be some questions from our gallery of listeners, but a couple rapid-fire questions. Dermot, what's a habit that you have that you attribute to? I know you don't think of yourself successful, but let's face it, you are.
Yes.
So what's a habit you attribute to your success?
I think one of the things I said about clarity.
Yep.
You know, there's an expression, I heard this one time, a minister talk about this, and he talked about in preparing for his sermons. Mm. And he said, the first thing you want to do is that you want to think yourself out. Think yourself out. What do I think about this subject? What do I think about this situation? What do I think about this person? What do I think about this goal? What do I think about this strategy? And just literally take your pen and just get it out.
Okay.
I call it vomiting on a page. I wish I had a better expression for it, but that's what it is.
Okay.
The next thing is look at that topic and then read up on it. So think yourself out, read yourself full, whatever that topic is. Mm. Somebody's written a blog. Somebody's written a book. Somebody's done a podcast. Somebody has faced that challenge.
Yep.
It may not be the way you're going to approach it. It may not be your style. It may be a terrible idea. But there might be one thing in there that's like, no, that's me. So I'd say read yourself full. Then the next thing is write yourself clear. You're back to paper. Mm-hmm. Okay, now that I've got it all out, created some room, some headspace. Now I've filled it up with some other people's thoughts. I'm formulating things. I'm going through the process. I'm thinking. Now sit down with a pen and paper and say, now what do I think about it? And I think then once you write yourself clear, you can communicate it too. You can sit down with somebody and you can refer, and you can be, the clarity of thought doesn't come typically from what we're doing here, talking.
Right.
The clarity of thought typically comes from the head to paper, then to the mouth. And so I think that's something that served me well. A lot of times people in San Diego will see me out for breakfast sometimes. I do a lot of breakfast in the morning because I do a lot of meetings, but a lot of time I have an appointment with myself. And I just have a pad. I just have a notepad, and if you see me, I might wave at you, but I'm thinking.
Yeah.
Because I'm getting clarity. So I'd say that's a habit that's really served me well, and I have a bunch of others, but that one's been very helpful.
Making an appointment with yourself. That's what I heard. I like that.
Yeah.
All right. So what's a piece of advice that you've been given that stayed with you all your life and served you well?
I would say, you know, do the right thing. Do the right thing. And that might mean, to be honest with you, I've had to learn with that. That doesn't mean it is the right thing.
Right.
It doesn't mean you got the right answer. It didn't mean you got the right, you didn't do it right. But like based on the information I have, based on my knowledge, based on where I'm at, I don't have to prove to somebody in my heart that I am trying to do the right thing. And now I do need to prove to myself that that's my integrity. I wanted to do the right thing there. And I think once you have that inside of you, you won't care what anybody says or how they judge what you did or what they think about you. You can detach from it.
Right.
But I think in every situation, that's what I hope to do. I do the right thing. And what I've learned as well, if I didn't, you can, you know, most people are going to give you the grace to go back. If you go back and you own it and say, hey, can I just explain to you a little bit about what was behind that? And here was my intention.
Right.
But I can see that that didn't have the outcome I desired. Now, I want to apologize to you for that. But my desire is to do the right thing. And I was wondering, could you help me understand your perspective so I can consider that moving forward? So I think doing the right thing is something that at the end of the day, it's great because it gives you a real voice for yourself. It gives you power to yourself, and it allows you to understand your own heart. And then you don't have to, you never have to quibble with somebody who doesn't know your intentions in your heart, because you avoid, it's mute point.
So much of what you've talked about today comes back to self and just an inner strength that whatever's going on in the outside world, you've got this kind of compass pointing north. So you've made some great points today. I want to ask you a couple quick questions before we turn it over to outside questions. And I'm going to take your family off the table here with this question, because I'm going to ask you, who outside of your family do you truly admire? Because I know there's plenty within your family you can admire.
There's a lot of people. I came to faith here in the States reluctantly.
Mm-hmm.
Skeptically, but that's helped me a lot. I think there's people like Rick Warren out there. There's Bill Hyde. There's so many people out there in that realm who are so real. There's people who, you know, I've been fortunate to meet a lot of people and I admire them for what they've done sometimes, or sometimes who they are. You know, I'll be honest with you, one of the people I admire the most is a guy who's a pastor of a church down in the ghetto of San Diego. He's a guy who finished first in his, he studied law, finished first in his class, was being recruited by every law firm on Wall Street, you know, straight out of college, making $300,000-$400,000 and partnerships. And he turns his back on that and goes to seminary because that he feels is his true calling.
Wow.
Goes to seminary, finishes first in his class. By the way, he played football at the University of Virginia. Had an opportunity to go to the NFL, turned it down because he didn't feel like that was his calling.
Wow.
And he is living down amongst refugees and people who are really struggling, no matter what the economy is. And he's doing his thing, and that's what he feels called to. And I look at him and I go, wow, you did it all right. You're the most successful person I know, but you've chosen a different calling. Mm-hmm. And I'll be honest with you, if I had one person to call in the world, and he's probably 10 years younger than me, he'd be the guy I'd call. So I don't think it's always, again, success has got different labels. And I think a lot of times you can look in the wrong way or look at the wrong people. But, you know, there's a lot of people I admire. Yeah. And all sometimes for different reasons. But he'd be one. His name is Stephen Phelan. So he's a good man.
And that speaks to what you brought up earlier about being clear, having clarity. Okay, so I want to ask you a couple lighter questions. I'm going to throw some of your own questions back on you from your podcast.
Okay, right on.
All right, so we're on the desert island. What's the book you bring with you on the desert island?
I know people are going to say it, but I think obviously I'd have the Bible because there's 66 of them, and I don't understand half of them, and I've been studying that thing for the rest of my life and still not know what the heck it says. Gosh, that's a great question. I can only bring one. I'd bring that.
Okay. And we're still on the desert island. What's your album or your song? What's the song that
It's probably U2, something U2, you know, something. Yeah, probably I'd get away with that.
Yeah,
you've been listening to Desert Island Discs too much.
Oh my gosh, that's a blast in the past. Nobody Google that.
And one of Brian's favorite questions: what's the movie you always go back to kind of get that motivation?
You know, I'm kind of one and done guy. I not that I wouldn't go back and do it. And I think, you know, he asked me the same question. I was like, I really enjoy the movie. There's a couple. One of them I really loved was Cinderella Man.
Oh yeah,
because that was just my 10-year-old the other day. I said to him, "Son, you're gonna have a coming of age moment. I'm about to expose you to something that could change your life forever. And it's not high intellectual quality, but it's good heart quality." And he goes, "What is it, Dad?" And we put on Rocky.
Oh, yeah.
And I walked into his room the other day, and he's 10 years of age doing one-arm press-ups. He's like, "Dad, how do I do one-arm press-ups?" And I'm like, "Have you seen me? I barely walk. Never mind doing a one-arm press-up."
That's so great.
I think that's a couple of good ones, but I think they're nice. Solid.
Okay. Hey, Jonathan, do we have some people that want to ask Dermot some questions before we wrap?
We haven't had anybody put anything in chat. We still have three listeners that have digitally been with us from the beginning. So what I proposed is that we wrap up the podcast part, and I'll see if they want to join the panel and ask Dermot a question directly. So I think the best thing is to wrap up the actual recorded part of the show.
Yeah, I just say, you know, you have everything you need to succeed. You're in a great country. It's you might not have everything you want yet, but you have what you need, and you have who you need, and you're where you need to be to get it done. And I would just recommend that to give yourself a fair evaluation of your strengths, your own weaknesses. Pay attention to what you love to do, what gives you energy. Pay attention to what robs your energy. And then don't go it alone. There's a lot of people out there who can benefit from what you have to share and your story. But there's also a lot of people who want to help and speak into your world. So that's what I'm doing. And try that out.
And then if somebody was compelled to seek out a coach at Buffini & Company, how can they reach you, or what do they do to get in touch with Buffini?
Yeah, just give us a call here at Buffini & Company, or go online to buffinicompany.com and check out the website and see if it's for you. Tune into some of the podcasts and check it out and see if it aligns with your philosophy. But we've got we've over 200 and something people here, and we've got great coaches, and they care about more about what you want than what we want as a company. So, we'd love to. We're never too busy, as you'd say, for someone who has the desire to be coached and transform their life and their business. So, help you.
Well, you've certainly sprinkled some pearls of wisdom and nuggets of gold on us today, so thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure.
Absolutely. Jonathan, do you want to let people know how to reach you?
Oh, it's quite easy, folks. I'm normally on Twitter and Facebook. Twitter at Jonathan Denwood. I think there is only one Jonathan Denwood on Twitter. Or on Facebook, the Mailwright Facebook page. Or you could email me. I do. Anybody that personally emails me, I always have the courtesy to email them back, normally a couple of days later. And that's at jonathan@mail-wright.com.
All right, and I'm Thomas J. Nelson. I'm a residential realtor here in America's finest city, San Diego, California, where I'm never too busy for your referrals, and I learned that line from Buffini & Company. Been sitting in that audience for 18 years and been coached for almost 15 years, and I want to thank Dermot for being here, and he and Brian and Buffini & Company have definitely impacted and improved my life over the last couple decades. We're going to go to the bonus material now, which is on the video aspect of this show, but we'll be closing out the audio aspect at this point. Thanks for being here, everyone. Thank you.
See you later, folks. Bye.